the home team.
And here we go.
All right, rolling into hour number two, the home team, presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. Chris and Jeff till 7 tonight. We get into today's 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And, Jeff, question number one has a correct answer, in my opinion. And if you get it right, I will ask you four other questions.
Okay, buddy.
What is the most meaningless position battle in college football this offseason?
Alabama quarterback.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it right. Like, it doesn't – like, Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, it does not even matter who starts. Right?
The Emperor's going to keep them both happy.
Yeah, they'll both play. By the way, the Braves have drafted Justin Fields in the fourth round.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding. They didn't do that. I'm joking.
That would be brave.
You can drive back onto the road now.
Since they took George Lombard back in 1994, and he never showed up. I think he's still the Dodgers' first base coach.
No, but it is like freaking me out because you do see all these names, you know, of the potential draft prospects, and I keep scrolling and I see Justin Fields and Terry Godwin. Like, didn't the Braves take Godwin last year?
I think so, yeah.
Because I remember like a year ago we were sort of nervous that like he could be a high enough pick.
Fields?
No, I'm talking about Godwin.
Godwin. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think Godwin, and I'd asked Coach Strickland about him too, and they thought football was his best future, but that he pitched some too.
Godwin did?
Yeah, that the scouts really liked him.
Yeah. Well, Fields a good ball player also.
Oh, big time. That was another reason it was nice to go ahead and get him in this spring.
Yeah. Well, we don't have to worry about, because the A's took Kyler Murray with the number 9 overall, but he says he's going to play for the Sooners this fall and then sign with the A's after that.
Now,
I'm Oakland. I'm like,
can he get that money up front?
I guess he could.
Well, then he'd be ineligible.
But would he?
Yeah. I think.
I don't think so. Which is another one of those deals where, like, the NCAA gets to decide what amateurism is.
So
it's whatever it wants it to be.
I guess you can. So nowadays, can you be a pro in one sport? Yeah, because, I mean, what's the difference between that and playing minor league baseball, right?
Right. But I think he said he's playing for the Sooners and then he's going to sign.
Gotcha.
I think I'd go ahead and get that $4 million if I were.
I would too.
Yeah.
I would too.
But
yeah, I'm not sure what the rule on that is now.
The guy was a big-time quarterback prospect and started at A&M, and now he's at Oklahoma, so I guess he wants to play ball. I mean, sitting behind Baker Mayfield last year, he wants to at least get one crack as a starter.
And he began his career. He was one of those A&M guys. His dad's one of their great players ever, Kevin Murray.
Yeah.
And that's what A&M, who they signed, was it Josh Allen? Was a quarterback's name? He wound up at what? Houston. Ken Hill wound up at TCU.
And he ended up at Oklahoma.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be like, I mean, he was so good. That'd be like if, you know, I don't know, like John Lasting or Buck Belue's kid came here and wound up transferring to, you know, Auburn or something.
Yeah. I don't think it was Josh Allen. Josh Allen's the terrible quarterback from Wyoming who the Bills took.
Kyle Allen.
That's it. Yeah. But yeah, they had three.
Oh, my God, blue chippers.
Yeah. I mean, all ended up. It's not like they transferred to, UT San Antonio or something. They went to, like, schools that would have been rivals, except,
well,
you know, Texas A&M's in a different league now.
If it was the old days of the Southwest Conference, you bet.
They laid an egg, by the way. They went 0-2. Just headed right home. Did they even get to play Texas? They didn't,
wait,
did they?
Wait, A&M?
Yeah.
I thought they won their first game, then lost to Texas.
Oh, okay. I thought they went 0-2.
Check it out.
All right.
I've been in the vortex. We've seen so many scores. I apologize if I'm a little sluggish today. It was a long weekend. What made it longer, too, sat around out there all night, Friday night and Saturday night, and didn't play.
Yeah. Well, that 11-run inning didn't help.
Oh, my gosh. And it was.
They beat Indiana. So they. No, they beat Indiana and then lost to Texas and then lost to Indiana. So, yeah, they did get one win.
And I'm just guessing that once they lost to the Horns, they probably just said, yeah.
Yeah. That had to leave a mark. A&M and Texas playing. Texas got the win.
Now Tennessee Tech rolling into Dish Falk.
I'd watch out for them.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, well, you answered correctly. The most meaningless position battle in college football this year is who's going to be Bama's starting quarterback? Because the answer is going to be, well, basically both of them are going to be.
Well, they'll blow out half of the teams they play.
Yeah, it just doesn't even matter.
Yeah, they'll get to play.
Again, they're opening against Louisville, and you know the line is anywhere from between 20 to 29 points.
Is Lamar Jackson still playing? No, he's for Baltimore.
He's gone.
Now.
He's
that's
with
right.
the Ravens. Yeah, where right. has Joe Flacco still not answering his text, or is that, or did he finally get around to acknowledging his existence? Well, between Flacco and Roethlisberger, man, those two guys did not like their team's drafted quarterbacks.
No, they sure didn't. And you know, I'll say this: Ozzie Newsome, who's been a great GM, he did a really good job with their draft. I felt like he set them up with a terrific player for the present, and he set them up with their quarterback of the future.
Yeah, I think for his final draft, mm-hmm. he went out with a bang.
To get Hurst and Jackson, which that's who I predicted New England would take, and they wound up taking Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel.
Yeah. They did better.
They did even better.
They took two dogs. Chubb signed his contract yesterday. So,
I would imagine he and Baker Mayfield, like you were saying, that's going to get a lot of play. Is that the HBO
it's
show?
It's on Hard Knocks, okay. Yeah, this summer.
So how quick do they turn those things around?
Oh, within like the week.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, usually on shows like that, it's a deal. Like I never saw it, but I think the show that Ross Wilson and Pruitt were on, I think that was one they like filmed it, and a lot of sports stories you'll see, they'll film it in the season and you'll see it like 6 months or a year later.
No, this is turned around.
That's it. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. So like if Chubb and Mayfield brawl at practice, you'll see it on Hard Knocks.
I would take Chubb in that one.
I would too, but they won't brawl because Chubb's too nice of a guy.
Right.
All right, moving on in the 5-5, since Jeff got the first question correct. I thought this was – you did not you really didn't alert me to the potential for this happening, Jeff, and I was caught off guard by the news today that Jalen Humphries, the defensive tackle out of Lawrenceville, is committed to Florida. Jeff, what does this mean for Georgia moving forward, trying to get some depth on that defensive line?
Yeah, I was surprised to see that too, and it's interesting that I just read the story, like I'm sure a lot of Georgia fans did on Dog Nation. They did a profile on Humphries, and
that was yesterday.
Yeah,
I was reading
he said
that.
He was beginning his visit, so this was the first visit that he took, and he committed. So hey, you have to take the young man at his word. He says he's committed, but if he continues to take visits, I don't think the thing's dead. And you absolutely trust in Kirby Smart and what George is doing in recruiting, and I would think George would want to sign 3 to 4 defensive tackles and 2 to 3 defensive ends, and I would imagine they will all be very good players. And just one thing to keep in mind, what at this point last year, Fields was committed to Penn State and Brenton Cox was committed to Ohio State and Cade Mays to Tennessee. So if Georgia wants him, I'm sure the Bulldogs will put on a full court press and the deal's not dead yet.
Well, that's been the most impressive thing, or I guess one of the most impressive things about what Georgia's done in recruiting these last 2 years. It's the number of players that the Dogs have gotten, have signed, who were committed mm-hmm. to not just like other schools, but other powerhouse schools. So maybe that this will just be another one that Kirby can add another notch in his belt of like, yeah, remember when he was committed to Florida? Well, he'll end up signing here.
Well, this is a big spot, though, for so many reasons, because that is the one area. And again, the year Derrick Brown went to Auburn, Georgia did get Julian Rochester, David Marshall, Tyler Clark, and Mikael Carter that year. So Georgia still signed a very good defensive line class that season. The problem is in the next year, really the last couple of years, there just haven't been a ton of defensive tackles in the state. Now, losing Aubrey Solomon was a big blow, and then we saw Georgia make a change. And then last year there really wasn't a whole lot in state. Georgia wound up getting Devontae Wyatt back, went out of state to get Jordan Davis, got Tramell Waltower, who's going to go off to junior college. I think the plan is for Tramell to follow in Devontae Wyatt's steps and to come in, hopefully, in late December by January. Again, I don't know that, but I believe that that's the plan. And then, you know, I would say that you would see that, and Georgia probably sign, again, around 6 defensive linemen, with 4 of them being interior guys. And you know, some other big targets, Trayvon Walker's at the top of the list. And then out of state, Georgia's got a commitment from Bill Norton. And looking at C.J. Clark, from the state of North Carolina, and then Derek Hunter from down in the state of Florida. There's another defensive tackle in North Carolina named Jordan Davis that Georgia's on. But if Georgia wants Humphreys, and by all indications, I think the Bulldogs do, Georgia's going to keep pushing on him.
Well, I mean, that is between Solomon and Brown, those are big blue chip misses that we've had. But, I mean, the thing with Brown is even if we had signed him, we'd be in essentially the same exact spot on the defensive line. He's going to be gone next year anyway. And, I mean, you'd have a great player on the defensive line. Georgia does have really good players up there already. But the problem isn't the D line in 2018, it's the prospects for it in 2019.
And really even looking more so to 2020.
Where it gets even thinner then.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Georgia got signed, even with Waldhauer, just two guys last year, right?
Right. We got Jordan Davis and then Devontae Wyatt came back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but, I mean, Georgia's, listen, I will say I trusted Kirby and the staff that they're going to do a good job putting together a defensive line. But Georgia's in a spot now kind of like where the Dogs – put together those great offensive line classes in 17 and 18. Georgia's going to need to do that for the defensive front with the classes of 19 and 20.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it is odd that we're recruiting elite at every single position, but for whatever reason at defensive tackle between Solomon and Derek Brown. And now, I mean, if Humphrey sticks with Florida, there's another one. You know, hopefully we'll get Trayvon Walker, though. That'll help us feel better about Jalen Humphreys.
And I'm Bill Norton from out of state, and I would guess you'll see at least two more out of state defensive linemen come in.
The thing about Humphreys is prior to today, I just kind of assumed he was coming here.
I'd seen was 100% lean to Georgia.
I mean, I just took it for granted, and then all of a sudden you see like he commits to Florida. I'm like, well where'd that come
from?
Well,
maybe it's one of those deals, Brain, when you're like, oh yeah, this girl, she likes me a lot. I'll see if I'm in. Then all of a sudden she goes on a date with another guy. It's like, whoa, I better up my game here.
Well, maybe Kirby told him to do it so that then we can get him and just it'll look like, you know what,
Gators.
We stole another recruit.
There you go.
Who had been committed to another. To a rival.
Love it. But, yeah, if Georgia wants him, I don't think that thing's dead.
All right, moving on. Georgia baseball loses a pair of games to Duke yesterday, and the season comes to an end. So Texas Tech celebrated. They were probably getting ready to come to Athens. They get to stay home in Lubbock now this weekend. But, Jeff, where did it all go wrong yesterday for Georgia?
It was just a disappointing day, and Georgia had a tough regional with starting pitching, and I think it all caught up to the Bulldogs. The bullpen was lights out. The bullpen was great all season. But in the end, it just got taxed way too much. And the starting pitching wound up going 3, 3.2, 5.1, and 2+. And you know, at some point, that's going to catch up to you. And the Dogs had a couple of bad breaks yesterday, and Duke played great. They were a hot team, and you know, to come from being down 8-1 after six innings in the loser's bracket game, they get a long weather delay, and after that they scored, I think it was 43 runs in their last 29 innings. They absolutely caught fire. And, you know, Georgia had leads in the early innings in both of those games, but Duke just had a little bit too much firepower at the plate. And Duke bring it in. There were three pitchers they used yesterday, two out of the bullpen and one starter. Going on extremely short rest, who all just pitched lights out.
I mean, that first lefty they brought into the first game yesterday ended up with 8 strikeouts.
He was tremendous. He was a Georgia guy, too, 6'5", 250 from Norcross.
Now, I mean, that's the thing. He wasn't like a crafty lefty. He was He was like a left-handed power pitcher.
No, and he had pitched the day before. Their starting pitcher for the finale yesterday started on Saturday, threw 70-something pitches. Came back and threw over 100 yesterday.
Well, our starting pitcher played 3.5 hours at center field the game before yesterday, evened it out.
Yeah, that was probably one looking back. If we're all geniuses 2020 with hindsight, but you know, looking back, you probably sit C.J. Smith and say, hey, we might need you to pinch hit, but we got to have you ready just in case.
Yeah. I think about like in these, you know, like in – playoff series when games seem to be going along, the next day starter, like eventually the manager will send them back to the hotel or something.
Right. Don't even be tempted by it, right?
Yeah. And you're like, you know, you need to get rest.
Yeah.
You don't need to be sitting out here. This game could go on forever. But yeah, you know, looking at it now, it doesn't seem like the wisest decision, because yesterday was a pretty hot day and that game was long, and so you just, this guy's roasting out in the field for 3.5 hours, and then you've got not a day-night doubleheader. It's less than an hour later you need to come out and start.
And then, you know, it was just crazy, too. Like we were saying, the home field advantage is not what you think it is in these regionals. Now, obviously, we had such unbelievable success, and you've got the crowds, so that is enormous. But when you're talking about some of the little things, like, it was a very talented young man named Chris Gilmore, puts together all these tremendous videos. You know, you like when Duke scores a run, you have to play their fight song over the PA, things like that.
You have to? Because I remember in 01, we played Tech's fight song once.
Yeah, that happened one time.
And a certain someone came storming out of his radio booth.
Yeah, that didn't happen
so
again.
If Tech came back here for a regional, you're telling me we would play their fight song?
I think the deal might be to play your fight song, you have to play theirs.
Okay. Well, then we would not play our fight song.
I think that's what wound up happening.
But that's I know it's weird. We're visitors, but when we beat Clemson in 06, we were the visitors in both of those games. We batted
in 04.
In 04, yeah. Pardon me, yeah.
No, I know. I still
we were
don't
the,
know.
In 08, we were the visitors three times in that series. Lipscomb once.
I know. It's unbelievable. Like, we were the visitors in game two and game three. I mean, to me, if you host one of these things, you ought to be the home team. But
you should, but it's not. I mean, this isn't anything that they just decided on this year.
No. I've just always – I'm not making any excuses.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's the home field advantage is great with the crowds, and the crowds we had in 01 and 04 and 06 and 08 were unbelievable. And the problem is that this past weekend, and I'll use Monday as a weekend now, with everything that happened with the weather, I think fans were having a hard time figuring out when we were going to play.
That was a big deal, as the crowd yesterday was not even comparable to anything that we had.
Not even close. And then when you're talking about when they had to empty out the stadium between games, I'm telling you, at the start of the finale, it looked like we were playing Presbyterian in March. There might have been 100 people in the stands. Now, as the game went on, more and more people came in, but it wasn't jam-packed. I mean, it wasn't even close to what we had back in the 00s. Now, again, I get it. It's a Monday afternoon, and a lot of people – this is crazy. I'd even said to Coach Strickland, and Dave and I had talked about this. Sunday morning, we were getting ready for our second game. I went down to the dugout, and I said, I'm exhausted, and we've only played one game.
Yeah,
because I sat around up there for 5 hours Friday night and for three or four Saturday night.
Yeah.
And, again, not making excuses at all, but, you know, that's tough on players. And tough on players for all the teams, and it's definitely tough on your fans, too, just trying to figure out when you're going to play.
Well, one of those games, while they were waiting to play Troy on Saturday night, though, they got to go hang over in the lounge at Sanford Stadium.
That was nice. So, yeah.
They were probably a little more relaxed than you were.
Yeah,
but
I was just sitting up there going, like, all right. Then all of a sudden Duke started scoring.
11 times in one inning. We've got a chance to play tonight, and then all of a sudden it was like, well,
no, we're not going to be able to. And then I'll tell you what, though, that win over Troy was electric. It was a great crowd for that.
So it was two noon first pitches and then a one in like a 5:15, right?
Yeah, we might have been noon and one. We might have had one noon and two ones. But it was around –
because I remember when we beat Florida State in that
– In 01. That was on a Monday afternoon.
That was on a Monday evening. I would think that was like a 7, six or a 7.
Daytime. It finished – the sun was out when we clinched that. The comebacker to Smiling Bill Sharpton.
Okay.
But remember, the Friday night game got rained out against Florida State.
Right.
So we played Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday.
And we had rain against Stony Brook that one year and played at 11 a.m. that Saturday
did.
So, I mean, that's the thing. Everything that happened in this regional happened before.
It's nothing new. It is. But, I mean, I'm just telling you that the crowd at the start of that finale, and I get it, there were a lot of factors going into it. That's what we kept saying on the air. Hey, if you're in the area, come on out.
I thought you were getting a cut of the gate.
No,
because I kept hearing you say that. I'm like, Jeff must be getting he must be getting an integrity fee.
Again, you know what I am? An oxymoron.
Yeah. Speaking of the integrity fee, Jeff, Delaware's governor, John Carney. Is that the guy who used to kick?
Might be.
He today, Jeff, he made Delaware's first legal sports wager. He put $10 on the Phillies to beat the Cubs tonight. The Phillies, by the way, are catching. It's like plus 188. They're at Wrigley Field.
All right, so.
So he's got 10 to win about 18, 19 bucks.
All right.
Jeff, does he have a winner tonight? Phillies Cubs.
Well, if they're that.
The governor of New Jersey.
Usually those, when you got that much plus money, that means the Cubs have got the edge with a starter. They got to keep it tight and win in the bullpen, right?
Yeah. Now that guy, he's a real wise guy, though, putting 10 bucks down. I don't think the line moved after that based on his putting $10 down.
Oh, man.
Let me see if I can get a pitching matchup for you. You know, maybe Nola's pitching.
Is it Fergie Jenkins and Carlton?
No, it's Kyle Hendricks and Zach Eflin.
I don't know Zach Eflin.
So, anyway, the Cubs are
a big. The Phillies are better than everybody. The Phillies and the Braves are both better than everybody thought.
The Braves have been the most profitable team in MLB this
really?
Year. Oh, yeah.
So they've won a lot as underdogs.
Not last night, though. They lost 11-4 to the Padres.
I don't even know what day it is.
Today is Tuesday, June 5th.
I mean, I'm just telling you, it was a long time out there at the yard.
Yeah, it was. All right, Jeff, moving on in today's 5 at 5. So you probably don't know then that yesterday was U.S. Open qualifying, and Adam Scott, who has 29 wins worldwide, including the Players and Masters, is 37 years old, but had to qualify yesterday to get into the U.S. Open. So, Jeff, my question is, what happened to him? How is it that he's
gone? Putter.
Is it that?
Yeah. Kutch kind of predicted that. So I remember saying, what do you think? He says, when they take that broomstick out of his hand, we'll see.
Whew. But he's just – so he's gotten to the point where he's won the Players, the Masters. He's got 29 World 1 wins.
He should have a British Open, too. Remember, he went 4 straight bogeys in 2012 when Els won.
Yeah. He choked that one away.
He did.
And he's 37, but he's still in an age where you could kind of consider him
sort of
in his prime.
Of course.
And he's qualifying yesterday for the U.S. Open.
And he just won the Masters in 13, so that was just 5 years ago. Like, the U.S. Open doesn't give you a five-year exemption for winning at Augusta?
I think he finished, like, in the top 20 of the Masters this year.
Yeah, he's always going to play well there.
And he just played at the Memorial, so he went to the Columbus, Ohio qualifier yesterday, and he did get in, but... Still, I'm like, wow, he's got to qualify for the U.S. Open?
The U.S. Open's so strange because remember a few years ago when George was on Harris English, the week before he won at Memphis. He won a tour event. That's a long-time PGA Tour event, and he wasn't in the U.S. Open.
Yeah, he had to go qualify.
He won. I mean, there was even no way. The qualifying was closed at that point.
Oh, it was already.
Yeah, so he won on tour and still didn't get in. You're thinking, wouldn't you hold a spot? Because even the British Open, and I might be off on this by one or two, but I believe for the John Deere's the week before, like they have a plane there, and they hold at least two, and it could be up to four spots depending on if players are qualified or not. And literally, like if you're in contention, you bring your passport, and they wait when you're done. You know, if you finished in the top five at that tournament and hadn't qualified for the British Open yet, or maybe it's the top four, or obviously if you win, you go hop on that plane and they fly you straight over.
I want to see Tiger Woods at U.S. Open qualifying.
He'll have to pretty soon because his 10-year exemption runs out this year.
This year was 08.
So to me, I think the British kind of gets it. And then you would think for the John Deere, that adds some juice there too.
To get a field in there.
Kind of like Houston with the Masters.
Yeah.
And that was always Greensboro with the Masters.
But if you play, you're right, if you play the week before the U.S. Open, there's no chance the field's already set.
But it would be nice if they said, all right, we're at least going to hold one spot.
If you win.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's Harris English winning on tour and doesn't even play in the U.S. Yeah. Open. That's one where the USGA, I get it. You're the oldest tournament in America. But it's just
imagine you're Adam Scott and you've won the Players and the Masters and you can't get in. And you've won 27 other tournaments worldwide. Like he's won it. I think he's won Doral.
Oh, guy's a tremendous player.
Guys, but he's qualifying for the U.S. Open. What the heck happened to him? But you're right. I guess it is that putter. Because it's around about that time that you start thinking about it that he's just kind of fallen off the radar.
Yeah.
Jeff, finally we'll wrap up the 5 at 5 with news today out of the XFL.
Oh, okay.
Oliver Luck, who used to be West Virginia's AD. He was the one that didn't realize until after they moved into the Big 12 that West Virginia's a long way from other Big 12 schools. And now he's got some, you know, job as a – he's a bureaucrat in the NCAA, but now he's going to be the commissioner of the XFL. So Vince McMahon now appears – like, he's taking it serious this time. Like, your announcers are not going to be Jerry the King Lawler and Jim Ross for any of these games. But so the XFL now. Oliver Luck, I would consider him like a legitimate commissioner of a league.
He was a terrific quarterback at West Virginia.
His son is a – was a good quarterback, and now it doesn't appear. I mean, I don't know if he's going to play anymore or not. The XFL is right now slated to debut in 2020 in either like January or February.
Mm-hmm.
The first XFL lasted 1 year. How long does this XFL last?
What's the average length for these other pro sports leagues? 2-3 years?
Does legalized gambling give it a potential lift?
When are they trying to play again?
January or February.
So start right at the end of the NFL season?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe a little bit. It's just these other leagues just haven't worked. I mean, the World Football League didn't work. You know, I would watch the NFL Europe some because some of those guys would, you know, you could see some quarterbacks who were maybe third stringers who would play some. When I was a kid, I watched the arena games. But again, it was a different brand of football.
Right. Well, the World League, too, they had good uniforms.
They had good – and Larry Zonka went there for, what, a year?
Yeah. Well, then there was that other one, though, that ended up becoming NFL Europe, but they originally had, like, the Orlando Thunder.
Yes.
Birmingham had a team. They had some teams stateside, and then they folded, and they ended up with just where they had some – teams in Europe,
right,
for
the
a
World
while
League of
like
American
the Barcelona
football.
Dragons,
right,
and
right,
the London Fog or whatever.
That's a great nickname. Doesn't end in an S either.
But I mean, I say, at least Vince McMahon, I know he made the announcement or whatever late last year, and he pretty much said, like, you're not going to see me anymore. I'm bringing this back, but it's not going to be like the last time. And here we are now. I mean, naming Oliver Luck commissioner at least gives it the son. Who will you like better as commissioner, Roger Goodell or Oliver Luck?
Oliver Luck. Lock.
Yeah. All right, there's the 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.